This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling. It's NWA On Demand time. And I'm here. It's Pete, and I'm here with Johnny. Johnny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
That's awesome.
Fantastic.
That's awesome. Before we get going, I want a big shout out to Jose Lothario. He went into the NWA Hall of Fame today, so that was a big thing. It's on Twitter. It's a real big honor for him, and it's really neat because, I mean, probably this year alone, Jose probably gotten more fans because of NWA On Demand than he's had in recent year, and just because it's just a resurgence for him in a way. And so it's really cool that you can kind of go back and look at his career now a little bit more because of the footage available, and it just shows what a true class act the guy was. And he was a Hall of Famer even without this footage. But having the added footage just enhances it for me as a fan type of thing, you know?
Mm. Oh, totally. And it's so funny, you know, like we can say, like we said, within the quote-unquote smart fan community, those are the ones who are smart enough to subscribe to NWA. Hey, first month's free, dum-dums. You know, what do you have to
first
lose?
First week is free.
The week is free? Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to hook them. but within a lot of people, seriously, within a lot of people, were just like, holy shit, Jose Lothario was amazing. Yep. And this service is why we know that now.
Yep. He got play in the greatest wrestler ever poll based on the service. Like, he would not have even been made because the footage just wasn't out there. And now it's there. They have over 25 matches of his, and I think they're all pretty damn good. And if they weren't good, it wasn't because of him, because he's one of the guys who just he went out there and worked his ass off every single night, and truly the epitome of just a great, great babyface that was able to, not only was he an ethnic babyface, but he also appealed to all different cultures and stuff, and he just got over. Just a great.
Yeah, he was amazingly entertaining and amazingly over.
Yep.
I mean, if you could do that, I mean, that's not easy. Nope. You know, he's amazingly over and amazingly entertaining in the ring. And
it being amazingly over late in his career too, which is
as an old man.
Yeah.
Ass-kicking old men is I've said this before, is my favorite thing in professional wrestling. You know, Bill Watts coming out of, you know, retirement for one more, or Bruno coming out for one more. I love ass-kicking old dudes in wrestling, and watching him do that in this footage just puts a huge smile on my face. Love it.
Totally agree.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show, right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, the Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaySimation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySimation.com, the only place to be in your...
Hey, let's kick off the matches that were dropped this week on NWA On Demand. The first one we're going to look at is Bruce Brody versus Alexis Smirnoff from June 11th, 1982. It only went about 5 minutes, 5 or 6 minutes, but hot damn, I was so impressed with this match. I mean, it was just a really spirited, stiff brawl. And pretty much what you need a 5-minute fight to be. Both guys were hitting each other really stiff and hard. They went in, they took it from outside the ring to inside the ring. There's chair shots. Brody goes over when he needed to. And really, this is like the Bruiser Brody, what you're kind of like the mythos is about, where he's this big, walking tall baby face here. And I thought he played the role to a T here. And this is one of. I don't want to say it's my favorite Brody match ever, but it's one of my favorites because it was just him really out of control and kicking ass and being tall, being large and in charge, you know? What were your thoughts here?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, for everyone, like, Brody never bumped for anyone. He bumped the shit out for Alexis Smirnoff here for a bit. You know, whether he sold is a different story, but who cares? It's not Bruce Brody. It's not what people paid to see.
Yeah, and even here, the selling didn't bother me because it was only 5 minutes long.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like to me, well, he hasn't taken enough punishment to have to be selling his ass off.
Right, you know? but he even gets sells enough to give him an opportunity to Brody up. You know, at one point, you know, he does a Hulk up. You know, so you have to be taking a beating to do a Hulk up, and Alexis Smirnoff, and I'm trying to remember if I've seen him before. I'm sure I have. I just can't. There were so many Russians in the 80s, and sometimes you get them confused. And I'm just trying to, because obviously the guy's not really Russian. In the backstage, trying to figure out what to call their new Russian, and then looking around, it's a whole gaggle of alcoholics in the wrestling business.
Yeah.
And they look at the bottle. Smirnoff! You're going to be Smirnoff. That's it. Good. But yeah, they were laying it in. There was a chick in the crowd. The loudest Bruiser Brody fan I've ever seen. And every time he was taking a beating, she was laying out this high-pitched scream, Brody! Just like, oh my God, not you, you're my hero. And here's another thing about the Brody mythos. Brody looks fucking cool. You know, that's a big part of it in the magazines.
Yeah.
Whenever you look at this guy, he fucking looks cool, dude.
He does.
Giant fucking hair, and he's... Oh, and the furry boots, dude.
Ray and the razor blade cuts all over his forehead.
Yeah,
you know?
He looks amazing. And this was also for the United States Brass Knuckles Championship. And I was like, I didn't know other countries had Brass Knuckles Championships.
Right.
But, you know, I already didn't know there was a lineage. Like, does the U.S. Brass Knuckles champion, is he automatically the number one contender for the World Brass Knuckles Championship? But again, Brass Knuckles just means pretty much...
Anything goes.
Anything goes. And now that I know that from this footage, because everyone always used to joke about that. Like, why are they called Brass Knuckles when they're not using Brass Knuckles? In Texas, that's just code for anything goes.
Yeah, I never understood it either. I mean, they had it in world class all the time, and I just never picked up on it, but here it's clear as day what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe because they don't have Paul
much.
Bosch explaining it. I mean, that's what, you know, as opposed to Mark
or
Lorenz
Bosch.
And stuff. Yeah.
Bosch explains it.
Yeah, exactly. Paul Bosch is incredible on it.
Yeah, and this was exactly, I thought this was a lot of fun. It was short and completely enjoyable.
Yeah, I have no, you know, I'm one of those guys who I'm all for a 5-minute brawl on a TV show, but on a wrestling card. I think it's a nice change of pace where you don't need it to be. Sometimes brawls can overstay their welcome, and here it didn't at all. So yeah, easy thumbs up match. The next match we're going to look at is, I know you didn't get a chance to look at it, right? It was Al Madrill versus Killer Carl Krupp, right?
Yeah. I know. I believe on the last show we mentioned that it came in under the wire for watching. Okay. But you, sir, are a trooper. And we say we're going to watch every single fucking match that drops. And you, sir, are a hero.
January 6, 1978. And when I first clicked on this thing, I'm seeing it's booked for 27 minutes. And I thought, are you kidding me? I mean, I was like, whoever booked it needed to be checked into the nearest insane asylum. He's definitely seeing things. He's, you know, I mean, this was just crazy. But then I'm seeing, because this is in the traditional two-ring thing where they have the big battle, two-ring battle royal, and they traditionally have that wacky tag match where it's happening in two rings. And I see the other ring is being worked on. So it's possible that they asked these guys to go long to stall for time. So that's what I'm going to go with, because I can't think they would want to book this match for 27 minutes. And actually, the first fall was actually pretty solid.
Wait a minute. Could you imagine them backstage going, wow, what were we booked for? 7 minutes. You know, it's Killer Carl Krupp. He's ancient. Like, okay, little glitch. We need you guys to go out there and do 27. Is that okay? Oh, shit. Okay, I guess so. You're the boss, Paul. Oof.
Yeah. But the first fall ended up being pretty solid, though they did blow this shoulder block pretty badly. Though I thought Madrill did a pretty good job of carrying this with the leg work, and then they went outside and they brawled for a bit, and overall the first fall was pretty solid stuff. And then the second fall, I'm totally digging the psychology for the most part, because Krupp went for the stomach claw 3 times. And Madrill escaped 3 times. And Krupp ends up winning the fall with a knee to the stomach, which makes sense. But I think if fall would have worked better if Krupp won it with a stomach claw. Since the whole match on commentary, Paul Bosch is talking about the big match coming up is Carl Krupp with the stomach claw versus Fritz Von Erich with the iron claw, with the head claw. So they're actually building to that match. So I would think you'd want to see Krupp actually win a fall with the stomach claw to get it over. So that was my only, like, I enjoyed the psychology of him keeping going for it, but I would have liked him to eventually actually win the fall with the stomach claw.
What they booked that match as the Third Reich explodes?
I'm not exactly sure. I think this is when Fritz was a babyface, though.
Okay.
Remember, you know, when you think about it, I mean, because he's going into his retirement in 82 at the Big Dallas show. So I think this was, this is, yeah, what they were going for. Well, yeah, no, it was in 1980 he retired. And yeah, this is 78. So I think this is right when his sons are coming up. So they babyface Fritz. But fall 3 was just terrible. It was one long, really long nerve hold that Krupp won with his feet on the rope, but in a nice piece of booking, because they're setting up the Fritz match, David Von Erich comes out and he gets the decision overturned, and so this helps promote the Krupp Fritz feud by David getting involved, and ends up they reverse the decision and Al Madrill gets the win. It's about a star and a half. It really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought the first two falls were pretty good, but this third fall was stinky. But I thought the booking and having David involved in the finish, I thought was really smart wrestling and stuff, really smart. The next match we're going to look at is Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Skandar Akbar from September 27th, 1985, which was a match that my brother and I were at live. Originally it was booked for Duggan versus Kamala and in the cage, and if Duggan won, he would get 5 minutes with Akbar. So me and my brother were begging, I mean begging my father to let us go because we wanted to see Duggan get his hands on that dirty, rotten, all the expletives that were socially acceptable back then that no way in hell will I say now on air. Afraid because it's not.
I don't know. Given the way things are going, I think they're going to be socially acceptable.
Yeah, right. But I just don't want to go there. But the Duggan Skandar Akbar thing is pretty interesting. A feud that took place for like.
Pete, before you go into your history piece, I just want to get my few things out of the way because your history piece is going to be awesome. Because the fact that you were there. And that story is tremendous because I can't wait to hear about that. I just have a few notes. I just want to get my bullshit out of the way.
Go for it.
I love that Akbar. And I've said this before. You know, all he needs to be as a Middle Eastern heel is just the headgear and a riding crop. Otherwise, he looks like a typical guy who owns a strip club.
Oh, yeah.
But when you think about this is also he was a Arab heel in this oil country, so they should be wearing obnoxious suits and shit like on Dallas when they would deal with JR. Yep. So I thought about that. I'm like, oh no, okay, yeah, that's why he's got tacky normal clothes underneath. This is Johnny logic, but I like it. That explains that little thing. Grizzly Smith is a giant man. Holy shit, he's yelling at Akbar, he's got to go in the ring because Kamala didn't show up. And I would bet, because I believe I read that the reason Kamala didn't show up was he was supposed to do the whole loop, losing loser leaves town matches to Duggan before he went to WWF. I wouldn't be surprised if Akbar just told him to bolt and told him he'd do it. You know, don't kill yourself, kid, before you go up there to work with Hogan. You know, I'll do it. And the last thing is, it's a loser leaves town match, but only from Houston for 30 days. If you think about it, it's only 30 days right between shows.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're monthly shows.
No, they're weekly. And,
oh, they were weekly. Oh, yeah. Really? That auditorium, yeah. They were weekly.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, then makes more sense. I just laughed about that. I'm like, that's amazing. You can make a crowd go, you're out of here for 30 days, asshole. But there isn't going to be another show for 30 days. But weekly. Wow, yeah. Weekly. And yep. they got crowds like that on a weekly basis?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, yeah. That must be so much fun. And that leads back into, I want to hear all about this because I believe, since you told me about you being there, I've been wanting to hear all about this and the history lessons.
Yeah, so, I'll talk about the match first and then go into a bit about the history. Again, like me and my brother went to the show as kids. I was probably like 13 at the time. Brother was 11. And we so wanted to see Akbar. He had so much heat from us and in the whole territory. Everyone hated Skandar Akbar, and there was a lot of reasons for it, and I'll talk a little bit about the feud in the history there. But, man, I thought the match was worked really perfectly. And let me see here, me and my brother wanted Duggan to get to that no good Akbar, and I know my brother and I called him much worse in real time back then, but bottom line, the match was worked spot on and was super heated. Duggan took most of the match. Akbar used a foreign object to gain an advantage. Duggan gets it and uses his finisher on Akbar. And it's actually stuff like this. I think a lot of people, because they don't have managers, these guys carried so much heat back in the day that you could put them in here, and then people weren't angry that we didn't get a Kamala match because, wow, we're getting the real blow-off, which is Doug is going to get his hands on Akbar for all the stuff that's happened and transcended throughout the years. And this feud really started like in 1982, when Duggan was part of the Rat Pack with DiBiase. And eventually, Akbar gets into DiBiase's ear. But DiBiase's like telling Duggan, "No, man, we're fine. Don't worry. My relationships with him is does not going to affect my tag partnership with you." But on the very first time that it's open to happen, DiBiase just turns on Duggan, and that leads to DiBiase Duggan their first round of feuds, right? And then throughout the years, they'd always go back to Skandar Akbar, either it'd be with Ted, or like an example, or they'd be running hot, or they'd use Devastation Incorporated, and that's when they started making Duggan more like the red, white, and bluish baby face, who's real patriotic, not quite Sergeant Slaughter-esque, or not like he was in the WWE patriotic, but patriotic as he was, you know, they played up his history of his father being a police officer. He'd wear kind of like the hippie bandana with the United States flag.
Right, and as we mentioned, and I thought this was a great thing Bill Watts did, was he goes, he likes to wear his hair long and grow his beard like a hippie, but he, you know, he's a fighting hippie for America, which I thought was the coolest thing.
He's fighting for the rights for everybody to do what they want to do, blah, blah, blah. And then, so he transitioned out of the feud with DiBiase. They'd run angles, like one angle was Duggan strips Akbar down to his skivvies on TV one time. Akbar would burn Duggan with a fireball. He'd send his men.
He had to shave his beard because of that.
Yeah, shave his beard. We'd have Kamala, you know, faces the devastation of Incorporated Kamala, Missing Link, One Man Gang. You know, they'd go through the gauntlet. So Akbar and Duggan just were always, either they weren't, if they weren't at the center of it, he was periphery, and it was just an interesting feud that went on for a long time. And between the two, they drew a lot of money. So when this happened and we didn't get the Kamala match, no one batted an eye because, wow, Duggan's going to get his revenge for, you know, eventually for all the stuff that went down. Took his best friend, burnt him, shaved his beard. I think that he might even blinded him at one point. I'm not 100% sure about that.
No, that was it. When they blinded him with the fireball.
That's right.
He also had to shave his beard because it was burnt off. And Bill Watts, he did that. He's like, you know, a guy like Hacksaw Jim Duggan, I know what a beard means to a man like that. It's like, oh, that's so good.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, we saw this match here, but, you know, earlier me and Johnny reviewed one where they had the, I mean, in no way in hell would this match get over at all. I mean, it'd be like a fart in church where they were tied to each ring post. Remember that? And they had to untie each other. The person had to untie himself, and then he'd be able to start beating up his opponent. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah, you're right. No one would fucking, you know. In fact, people would probably bitch about this, but like, oh, you know, bad booking, you know, or, you know, I was disappointed because we were promised this match and they didn't deliver. But I wanted to ask you, did you guys, when you were on your way to this show with your dad, did you know Kamala wasn't showing up, or was that a surprise?
That was a surprise.
And as you said, nobody gave a shit.
No one gave a shit because we're gonna see our hero beat the crap out of that no good oil stealing camel jockey, all the fucking nasty terminologies that we had as kids that, you know, were more socially acceptable back then. Now your parents, you know, they teach a lot better nowadays.
You know, I'm willing to say camel jockey is sort of innocuous at this point. And it's like, oh, okay, it's almost silly in its oldness. But
yeah,
I just love it because Akbar gets on the mic at one point and he's like, and this is why this is happening. As you can hear by my voice, I'm in no way Arabic. But you don't give a shit, do you? Boo, no. Love it.
Yep.
Fucking love it. This was the perfect example of making chicken salad out of chicken shit because, okay, Kamala took off. What do? We do this, and people are going to eat it up. And sure as shit, they did eat it up. And it was a blast. It was a super blast.
And it's because we went home happy. You know, that's mm-hmm. the key. You know, they didn't give us a crappy stip, or, you know, we didn't see Akbar pin Duggan.
And you even got the whole thing where Akbar's talking like that, and you're all like, what's going on? And Grizzly Smith is like, well, if you're the manager and you're responsible, and Grizzly Smith is babbling.
Yep.
And you people in the crowd, and I say you people because you were there.
Right.
Before Grizzly Smith finally gets to the point, you guys know what's about to happen because you start chanting, we want Akbar, we want Akbar. And Grizzly Smith is still struggling to get to the goddamn point about that Akbar's going to get into the ring. And you guys in the crowd already figured it out, what's going to about to happen. And the bloodthirstiness
is there.
The
only thing missing was like a lynch mob ready there.
Look, after last week, I think we need to back off.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah,
this is so much fun. This is like, for this to come up and someone to go, well, I don't know about wanting to watch that. That must be work rate. Watch this. It's fantastic. It's everything wrestling's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have any more because we don't have enough managers. And it's neat in the essence because you remember, you're watching wrestling around this time, Johnny.
I was immersed in this
time. We treated it like a shoot almost, you know? Like, we believed what we were watching for the most part. We knew it was a work, don't get me wrong, but we were able to put ourselves in the moment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. You were. It took something really, what? To question booking back then.
Right.
You're sort of like, this is what it is. This is what it is. Oh, that was disappointing. Oh, I wish that would have happened. It took something like Honky Tonk Man beating Ricky Steamboat for the Intercontinental title for you to go, I think I'm getting a little tired of this shit.
Yeah, that's a little too cartoony for my taste.
Or just being like, that disappointed me. And I was already kind of getting out of it.
Right.
And that kind of put the, like, even though what it led to, looking back, was fucking great. But that sort of thing. It took something big like that and not like, boy, what a disappointment that Kamala didn't show up for these matches where the crowd apparently is just a bunch of rabid goddamn animals who don't give a shit and just want to see Hacksaw Jim goddamn Duggan beat the fuck out of this guy.
Yeah.
And since he's an ex-wrestler, you do get that, you know, hey, with a like Lou Albano, with a foreign object, he could be a threat for, I don't know, a
few minutes,
40 seconds, a minute,
You're right.
And then you get your ending. It's great.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is the crowd, though, they bought it, and they believed it was a shoot, and they totally bought into it completely. Even these adults were like, okay, yes, Duggan's our hero, is going to get that no good evil man and stuff.
Evil man?
Yep.
You're going to go with evil man.
I know it. I'm going to stick
to it. I know the
it.
Term you want to go with. That's
I know, but I'm not about to.
Oh, no.
I know. I want to keep some of my audience.
Oh, no. I believe me, I've done my fair share of on-air apologies over the years.
I haven't had to do it yet, so I'm going to try to stay away from it.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Well, let's move into Mike Graham versus Mike Mulligan from December 4th, 1981. Johnny, why don't you knock this one out of the park for us?
Okay, I'm going to try, because when we decided to do the NWA Classics as a separate show and do everything that's released that week, you know, you're going to have weeks where more stuff's released, where not a lot's going to be released, and stuff maybe come up that when you see it, just the words, you go, okay, well, and this is Mike Graham versus Moon Mulligan. And I have to admit, I was going, okay, well, you know, we made a commitment. And I was basically, it's great that so many states this last election legalized marijuana, because this match requires it. And once you do, it's genius. And it's all Paul Bosch. This is a Paul Bosch tour de force. The match is starting. And Moon Mulligan, by the way, what a great name.
Uh-huh.
It's such a great name. He sounds like a B-level Popeye villain. You know, when he's not fighting Brutus or the Sea Hag, Moon Mulligan might show up.
Well, take this, and Moon Mulligan. Guess who his tag partner was back in the day?
Bluto.
No. Tank Patton, which is another great name. So,
But then we get Paul Bosch with his first great thing, because obviously there's a size difference, you know, and you got Mike Graham, and Paul Bosch is immediately aggressive. He's like, Mike Graham in there, the smaller one, but, you know, would you, and he emphasizes you, would you call a 210-pounder small? No, I didn't think so. And he's giving you that old, yeah, but, you know, this is wrestling. That's a 210-pound man. And he was very angry about it, which I loved. It was just great. Because it's Mike Graham. Everyone loved Eddie. And then he gets into describing Mr. Mulligan. And he has the Man Mountain Moon Mulligan. Or as some people call him, Moonbeam.
Yeah.
And with the pause, you know, doing my best Bosch, and I lost my shit. Moonbeam? Really? Who's some people? You? And he calls him Moonbeam a few times. Then they cut, after this, they cut to a shot of Nick Kozak, you know, the referee who looks like a jacked up Sean Connery, you know, and with a graphic that says Nick Kozak. What? Why are they giving a graphic to the referee and the match is going on? This is fucking bonkers. This whole thing is cuckoo bananas. Bosch starts talking about Moon's legs, because he's going to the head scissors, you see, because for approximately 83 years of my life, they traded a head scissors back and forth for on and on and on and on with the hair pulling and everything. And this went on and on. And he mentions that Moon has big legs because it was at 300 pounds, a man has to have big legs, you know, to hold all that weight. You know, he's not a fan of Moonbeam. Whatsoever. He's Moonbeam. You know why they call him Moonbeam? Because he smokes that grass, I've heard. They call him Moonbeam. Oh, he's got him 1-2. This is the match. Okay, it's not a great match. But Paul Bosch is, I don't know if he's having fun, but whatever it is he does here is fun. I was not looking forward to watching this. At the end of it, I'm laughing, and it was all Bosch. And he was hilarious with his commentary here. So it made this so enjoyable.
God bless.
In a train wreck way.
Yeah, God bless you're able to find something entertaining, because I found this match really terrible and grating.
It was all Bosch. Well, yeah, if you turned the sound off, I couldn't have watched this. But with the sound on and Paul Bosch, after ingesting heroic amounts of edibles, found this charming as fuck. And it was all Paul Bosch. Okay. He's a genius.
Oh yeah, I'm totally digging Paul Bosch, and he's actually really underrated. I know you like him on some of his comedy bits he does. Oh,
I like his though. I like old wrestler guys who are unintentionally funny, but like we said last week with that one match, when something's hardcore and this is the money angle, he puts it over, and he's an amazing commentator.
Yeah, he really
but
is.
But when it's stuff like Moonbeam, he's all over the place, and I love that. Yeah, that's what we like about old baseball announcers.
Yep, people believe in him. He has that Vin Scully.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that Vin Scully. Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I found the match terrible, though. I mean, it was obvious they were going to a 15-minute Broadway. The headlock spots were, like, forever. Like, paint drying, boring. Finally, of course, it picks up for the last minute. But, yeah, just totally yuck. I hated it. But thank God we have this killer main event for the show, which was originally there was Tully Blanchard versus Manny Fernandez, and then it was supposed to be Dick Slater versus Gino, but it ends up being Tully versus Manny Fernandez, and then eventually Dick Slater. And this was just one of those great moments in Houston wrestling that the only people who knew about it at the time were the people who were there. I love this. I mean, this paired with the Dick Slater match is one of those special Houston moments that people there still talk about today. I like Manny focusing on Tully's arm, and all of Manny's work is full of vigor, and most importantly, it looks like the arm work hurts like hell. Like, his arm should be falling out of socket because Manny just goes to town on it. And I think Manny is one of the all-time great strikers of all time, where he doesn't get his fair due, because the guy's incredible at making his stuff, laying his stuff in.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. In a small touch, Tully positions his body so his arm is far away from harm's way as possible. It was kind of like Starrcade 84 with Steamboat working Tully with Steamboat's floating rib injury they played, where Steamboat would turn his body away from Tully so his ribs were as far away from Tully as possible. And here we see it even, it might have been how he gave Steamboat the idea, but we see Tully doing pretty much the same exact thing here. And then throughout the first fall, we're seeing Tully getting some cheap shots, but eventually it all ends with the big flying burrito. The second fall is just really short and sweet, and Manny misses his finisher, and he ends up hitting his neck on the ropes, and then he rebounds and runs right into this knee of Tully's that looked like something straight out of a UFC fight that would have just knocked somebody out. And let's say here they play it up that he knocked out Manny and gets the 1-2-3. Really, really gritty stuff for that second fall. And then the third fall just morphs into this incredible fight. Both guys are bringing everything they have to the fight. The crowd is molten. And then Gino comes out and makes this thing volcanic at this point. The heat's off the chart. Gino saves Tully from getting pinned. Now Dick Slater's out with this mini 2x4. And he chases Gino in the ring. And as Gino runs into the ring, Tully is Irish whipped right into him, and they bang heads, and Manny gets the win. So I love that finish. Slater ends up beating on Gino with the 2x4, making him a bloody mess. Gino can't go, so Tully has to fight Slater. And so now it's Slater's match. And Slater's just taking it to Tully, and Tully's bumping all over the place. Slater's just aggressive and full of anger, and Slater takes the first fall. And then the second fall, Tully hits this big time slingshot headbutt and Slater selling an arm injury right into that bad arm. And this was a great spot, and led to Tully just murdering the arm, just destroying it, working it, taking it to town. But Slater musters up enough fight for a comeback. The only problem now, Gino comes out all Spear 76 head dressing and interferes, giving Slater the match. Post-match, the heels just beat the living crap out of Slater until finally the cavalry arrives. Overall, when you put both of these things together, this was like really epic stuff, like a 4.5-star match. putting both things together where you got the match and then you mesh it with the angle and then you come out of it, the feud's even more heated because you leave freaking Slater laid out. Awesome, awesome storytelling. Great episodic way to how to book your card where you're able to put your last two matches together to where it made it two good main events booked, but putting it, kind of meshing it together, made it into this like one epic thing that you won't forget if you were there live. What were your thoughts, Johnny? I mean, I was really blown away by this.
Oh, well, yeah. And before I forget it, because I didn't put it in my notes, what they're leading to was something that was mentioned during the Mike Graham match that I went, ooh. And then this stuff dropped right at the last minute. And we're like, oh, and it's amazing. But what this is leading to, apparently, and please, NWA Classics, tell me you have this. It's going to be Dick Slater and the Georgia heavyweight champion, Tommy Rich, coming to Houston to be Dick Slater's partner to fight the Dynamic Duo. And I was like, holy shit, that sounds awesome.
Dude, then, I thought we reviewed that already.
Did we?
I'm pretty sure it was awesome.
Oh, well, see, yeah, I think you're right. Wow. I guess this is why it's great that some of you guys on the boards are trying to put these cards in order. Because if you can then put these in order, and you haven't seen that, watch these first leading into that, because like, as you said, the storytelling is off the charts, tremendous. So good. Back to Manny. I always loved Manny Fernandez. First time I saw him watching Worldwide, that was one of my guys. And even when he turned, you know me, I was a huge Jimmy Valiant fan too. When he turned on Jimmy Valiant, I was disappointed, but at the same time, I was like, no, I have to respect anything Manny does.
Yeah.
I like Manny. And then, of course, that ended right after that, and we get my favorite tag team of all time, which was Rude and Fernandez, was my favorite tag team of all time. Not that they were the best, but I loved them.
Which led to them in the Rock and Roll having
great
matches,
Yeah, I got to see one live, and they were cool heels, you know, at a time when cool heels were an odd thing, especially in Philly. You know, when We Will Rock You hit, and they come out, that was like, that's some badass shit. The only other guys who seemed that badass were the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
It was very
and
brief.
They had great matches with the Road Warriors, too.
And, back to... I also thought it was neat. This is 1981. 3 years from this, Crockett has a resurgence in 84 and 85 when Dusty starts booking with all these guys except for Gino. And apparently, I think I remember in Gary Hart's book, there was talk of Gino going to Crockett. And for whatever reasons, it didn't happen. But Slater, Tully, Manny, boom, they're all the in Crockett, and two of them become mainstays there. I thought that was kind of a neat thing. Like, down here in Houston, these guys are tearing it up in 81, and they get to do it again 3 years later in a super hot territory on national television on TBS at that, which is really cool. And I always love when Manny would start doing his karate, because they told you he learned that shit in NAMM, man. That was always it.
Yeah, I know,
yeah. You know, Manny Fernandez served in NAMM. That's when he learned to do karate, which makes no sense.
No, I
whatsoever.
Know. It makes zero sense. But that's how they kind of gave him the patriotic way to work with Dusty as his partner, too.
Exactly. But you know what? I bought it. I'm like, because his strikes were always awesome, and Manny always just looked like such a badass.
Yep.
Me and Rob Naylor could have a goddamn jerk off orgy about Manny Fernandez, but
well, that's something that we don't need to see, but that's awesome.
Well, you know what? if you do want to see it, High Spots will pay for it. And then we have Slater and Tully. And you're right, that Tully slingshot headbutt into Slater's injured shoulder towards the beginning was awesome. Yep. I was like, what a great spot.
Never seen him do it before again after that either, you know?
Yeah, but it's also great because it's always one of those things, well, you need to sell that you're injured, and a guy just, if he doesn't give a shit, you know, you could tell by the way he puts on the tape. And Dick Slater literally has just a very small patch of tape on, you know, his upper pectoral.
Yep.
And that's it. And Paul Bosch comes to the rescue with this because Tully keeps working it over. He goes, well, Dick Slater might have some sort of injury under that covering that the bandage is. But if you look at the rest of his shoulder and neck, oh, it's bruised and sore. And I was like, oh, he realized what was going on. I need to explain this. You know, why is this dumb Band-Aid there? You know, when it's it. And Paul Bosch, for all of us goofing around about some of the silly shit, he saw an inconsistency and called it out and explained it away on television, which I appreciate that kind of thing. I love that sort of thing. And yeah, and the 2x4 was tiny.
Yeah,
it wasn't a giant.
Yeah, it wasn't Duggan-esque at all.
Duggan-esque at all. Yeah. So Dick Slater's always had 2x4 envy.
Yeah, it's the 2x4s that Duggan's autographs now. It's autograph signing.
Yeah, those little tiny ones. Yeah, that's all he gets. I've always had a bigger 2x4 than you, Slater. Tough guy. And you're right. This was great. And then we, of course, get the cherry on top is the good guys who all come out of the dressing room to break it up. Are the shirtless men in jeans.
Yep.
And it's like six guys all in blue jeans with no shirts.
Yep.
You know, running out to save the day, which always, I'm like, was there no air conditioning in the locker room? Was that one of the traditions of Houston that all the guys who got done working the other matches? Yeah, you can put your pants on. No shirts.
Yeah, no, who was it? There was Ray Hernandez, Scott Casey. And I can't remember who the other one was.
Oh, no, that's the one I made that jumped out of me, because when I saw him hit the ring, in my mind, I was thinking, is that Hercules?
Yep.
And then as I'm thinking it, Paul Bosch goes, Ray Hernandez. I said, like, yeah, fuck it is. It's so funny with all these muscular guys, especially of that time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When you can pick out a guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, that's Hercules Hernandez. You know, right away, you can always pick him out for some reason. He had star quality.
So, man, overall, who was your favorite? What was your favorite match tonight?
Oh, geez. God, it was everything. Everything was so good. I'm gonna have to go with the what I call the Grateful Dead main event with Slater, Tully, and everything, where when the Dead would play, one song would sometimes just lead into the next song.
Yeah.
And that's what this was. And that's fucking genius booking.
A total jam.
You could do that. Do it that way. Fantastic. Those two matches as basically two things together, it's fantastic. It's the best thing we've seen.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was incredible. That was my favorite. Who was your best performer, you thought?
Tully.
Yeah, same here, man. He was incredible.
Tully.
So incredible getting everything over. Oh, man. What a bunch of great. I mean, those main events were just fantastic. Remember, people, go to NWA On Demand. It's free for the first week. And sign it up. Check it out. And hopefully stay if you like it. I mean, I love it. Johnny loves it. check it out. So, Johnny, man, anything you got to plug?
No. Just, again, if, you know, you bitch about wrestling not being the way you want it to be, there's plenty of options. And one of your best options is NWA Classics On Demand.
For sure, man. Follow me at Titans O Wrestling on Twitter. Have a good one, man.
So
latest.
I sound like a grown jerk. We should all I had to do now was finish homework. It's true, you don't realize really what you got till it's gone. And I'm not gonna sing another sad song, but sometimes I do sit and reminisce and think about the years I was raised.
Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days
I
when I was young, I'm not
when.
A kid
and everybody
anymore.
Say,
but some days I sit and wish I was
when.
A kid.
And everybody
back in the
say,
days when I was young, I'm not
when.
A kid anymore.
What?
But some days I sit and wish I was a kid.